What's going on, everyone? This is the Fantasy Playbook Podcast. My name is Kyle Yates, and I am your host. I can be found on Twitter at KyleYNFL. I am joined today by my good friend, JJ Zacharyson of Late Round Fantasy. He can be found on Twitter at LateRoundQB. JJ, how are you today, my friend? It's good to see you.
I'm great. You know, it's finally August. You know, our lives are about to get even crazier, but football's back, and that's why we do this. We love this game, man.
We got preseason on the TV here tonight, and we're actually going to get to see some players rather than Hall of Fame game last week. I'm looking forward to this, man. And I'll say this too. I thought about briefly introducing you as the Fanny Pack King. I don't know if that's a title that you would be like welcome to having, but yeah. I thought about it. It popped into my head. I'll at least mention it here. The Fanny Pack King, JJ Zacharyson.
I love it. Right. You know, I wore that fanny pack ironically, and then people got really mad that I was wearing a fanny pack at Disney World. And so I've just embraced it because it just angers people on the internet.
Have you ever watched How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's the part in How I Met Your Mother where he insists on calling his fanny pack a hands-free belt satchel.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't call it a fanny pack. He's like, no, it's a hands-free belt satchel. So whenever I see like the clips coming up of you on Twitter or whatever with the fanny pack, I'm like, it's a hands-free belt satchel. All right. Hey, we are both dads. I want to have some fun here before we get into some football content. Question of the day here for you, JJ. What is the greatest Disney/Pixar movie of all time, in your opinion?
Okay. So I'll stick with like cartoon here, you know, that kind of vibe rather than going like, because if I were to go like real human being vibe, I would go with like Mighty Ducks and Hook or something that, like on, you know, on that spectrum. I think like cartoon growing up, I'd probably go with Aladdin as like my go-to growing up. Yep. But then like this new age, you know, with what we see with our children, you know, I have a little girl. I love Frozen just because she loves Frozen so much. But I got to give it up to Encanto. Encanto, yep. I think, it's unbelievable. The music's amazing. So I might honestly, for like a new age answer, go with Encanto. But, you know, my childhood, I'd probably go with Aladdin.
Well, here's the question. Since we're both dads, do you have the Encanto soundtrack still on repeat? Like when you're driving, is it still just on repeat in your house?
Yeah. We have a playlist that my daughter and I listen to every day going to school, and the entire Encanto soundtrack is on it. You got, you know, You're Welcome from what do you call
it's
it? From
fire, Moana. Moana.
Yeah. You know, we have these tunes that we jam to every morning. So I know all the lyrics at this point.
That's a fire playlist right there. You get Encanto, you get some Moana in there. Yeah. That's a fire playlist. All right. For me, I'll answer this super quick. That's Inside Out for me. I think Inside Out is brilliantly written. I absolutely love that movie. So whenever I'm watching the movie, you know, it's movie night with the kids or whatever, I am trying to push for Inside Out. I absolutely love that movie. All right. We got some keep trade cut here on the show here today. Want to have some fun again. And we're not in the season. We aren't actually able to trade these players yet, but it's a fun way to be able to look at some ADPs here as we look at the upcoming season. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight three players here for you, JJ, that are back to back to back in wide receiver ADP consensus. All right. So at wide receiver 27 through 29, we have Allen Robinson. It's crazy to me that Allen Robinson is wide receiver 27. Then Amon-Ra St. Brown and Gabriel Davis, two of the hottest names in fantasy football Twitter this offseason, with Allen Robinson and Gabriel Davis. And I think you could throw Amon-Ra St. Brown in there as well. Keep, trade, cut. Which one are you keeping? Which one are you trading? Which one are you cutting away?
Look, I'm cool with all three of these guys. I would probably keep Allen Robinson. He's the highest within my rankings, so I gotta go that route. I think he's going to be he's in store for monster season. So it comes down to Amon-Ra St. Brown and Gabriel Davis. I technically have Gabe ahead of Amon-Ra, but I think that you would get probably a little bit more trade value because there are Gabe stands out there in every single league that you'll be in. So I'd probably trade him away and then cut Amon-Ra. But you know, I love me some second-year wide receivers in the middle rounds, and he's definitely part of that group.
That is the exact same order for me as well. I'm going to keep Allen Robinson. He is sky high in my rankings. Then Gabriel Davis, you're going to be able to get a haul for him, depending on the league manager that you're talking to. And Amon-Ra St. Brown, there are a lot of diehard fans out there. I don't think you're getting that same trade value, so I would cut Amon-Ra St. Brown away as well. Let's do one more here really quick. Terry McLaurin, Deontay Johnson, and DK Metcalf at wide receiver 15 through 17 in ADP consensus. That's Terry McLaurin, Deontay Johnson, DK Metcalf. Keep, trade, cut.
I am going to keep Terry McLaurin. This might be a little controversial. I'm going to keep Terry McLaurin. I am going to cut DK Metcalf, and I'm going to trade Deontay Johnson. And I say the trading Deontay, I think he would get more value right now in redraft than DK Metcalf would, just given the way that situation is for Metcalf right now. I'm really worried about Deontay though. You know, just philosophically in the way that the Steelers are shifting, you know, their quarterback's gonna be more mobile. You know, they're likely going to be a little bit more run heavy. I just think that there's, you know, I love Deontay as a player a lot. Yep. Like, I think that you should still be buying in Dynasty because he's that good. But I'm just worried about his 2022. And then Terry McLaurin, you know, he's at least probably got a decent floor. I don't think the quarterback change is really going to do anything in terms of him getting worse statistically. You know, I think that if anything, it would be Jahan Dotson, who I like too. You know, but I do think McLaurin's at least like the safest option of those three. So I'd probably keep him.
So I brought you on here for this episode to highlight some differences in our rankings and to kind of just poke fun at each other with these rankings. And I'm a little bit concerned right now because we are in lockstep with both of these. I would be keeping Terry McLaurin as well. I would be trading Deontay Johnson and then cutting DK Metcalf. The trade value right now for DK Metcalf, you cannot get a return on investment there, at least to the point where it'd be worth shipping him off over Deontay Johnson. All right, let's take a look at some latest news here that broke since the recording of the last podcast. Melvin Gordon is working through a foot injury, and it's being determined the extent of the injury. Let's play this forward. JJ, if Melvin Gordon does miss time, let's just say that this is a, you know, 3-week, 4-week injury here into the season, what would kind of be your expectations for Javonte Williams? Would you be moving him up the draft boards, up your rankings here, or is Melvin Gordon really going to kind of hinder what Javonte Williams can be this year?
You know, I would move him up maybe a little bit, you know, but it's, you know, still the preseason. We haven't hit week one yet. He's a veteran. We can feel good about him knowing the offense and being fine there. I've cooled off a lot on Javonte. I was never really like high on him in redraft after they re-signed Melvin Gordon, but I was definitely like around consensus for a little while. And then report after report's been coming out saying that it's likely going to be a fairly split backfield. I love Javonte Williams. I think that he's one of the best talent, most talented running backs in football. But I think you have to be realistic about sort of this split. You know, I'm not even really like heavily targeting Melvin Gordon necessarily in drafts, because there's a lot of data that suggests that players his age and, you know, players that have done what he's done just in terms of wear and tear and such, you know, aren't necessarily the best middle round bets. But at the same time, it's still hurting Javonte because he's still going to get a lot of looks. I don't think we're going to see the same 50-50 split that we saw last year, but it wouldn't be shocking if we saw like a 60-40 still. And if it's 60-40, you know, Javonte's probably a little bit overdrafted right now. And I still see people taking him in like the mid-second when there are some really, really good running backs. And I mean, obviously wide receivers too on the board. So I think maybe you can move him up a little bit, but it's not something that I'm super, super concerned about right now.
I was looking earlier before we started recording here to see if there was any update on this. Have not seen anything. So we'll keep you updated here as we move forward with Melvin Gordon and working through that foot injury. Russell Gage pulled up during practice yesterday, appearing to suffer a leg injury. Pro Football Doc on Twitter believes that this injury could keep him out week one or against the Cowboys, or at least be limited. So if Russell Gage is not going to practice here throughout the rest of the preseason because of this hamstring injury, and it does limit him or keep him out week one, does this make Julio Jones any more intriguing to you, or is this really just kind of, we got to wait and see how this plays out?
Let's wait and see how it plays out. I mean, maybe Julio's a little bit more attractive. You know, I'm not one who thinks that he's like a wide receiver three in fantasy, but I don't think that he's going to be like irrelevant either. You know, I think I have him in like that wide receiver five-ish range or something like that, 5 to 6. So yeah, he would get a little bit of a boost though if Russell Gage didn't play week one and beyond. And, you know, I think what this does is, you know, since basically the middle of July, everything's just looked awful for Russell Gage. You have Chris Godwin coming back and looking like he's ahead of schedule. You have them signing Julio Jones. It looked like Russell Gage could have been a really decent value in those middle rounds. And now he's just dropping and dropping and dropping. And if his ADP doesn't change with this injury, then I don't think that I would be drafting him. That's just the, you know, hopefully it would shift, you know, with people recognizing that he might not play early in the season. But if it doesn't shift, then I think he becomes undraftable.
It's the time of year where group chats start coming alive again, and people are beginning to think about organizing their fantasy football league for the upcoming season. If you're one of these people, you need to start thinking about moving your league over to Fantrax. Fantrax offers incredible customization, like the ability to trade fab, to run an auction draft, or to even do something as unique as adding in points for the defense getting a fourth down stop. And yet, even with all of that customization, Fantrax does an incredible job of making it easy to navigate and set up. If you're ready to join the platform that everyone in your league is sure to enjoy, sign up for free today at Fantrax.com/playbook and be entered to win a signed DK Metcalf Seattle Seahawks jersey. Create your free account and then head over to the FFPlaybook.com/Fantrax giveaway for all the details on how to enter. That's the FFPlaybook.com/Fantrax giveaway for all the details. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports.
this doesn't really move Julio Jones up the rankings for me. I'm very low on Julio Jones this year. I don't think that he's going to be a consistent option for your fantasy lineup, but it really does just continue to move Russell Gage down the rankings for me and at least create a little bit of concern there. Devontae Smith has missed 5 practices in a row recovering from a groin injury, but he appears to be nearing a return. And N'Keal Harry underwent tightrope surgery on his ankle. So for the two people out there who thought N'Keal Harry was going to be a thing this year with the Chicago Bears, you will have to guess again. All right. Do you want to send your entire fantasy football league to an NFL regular season game of your choice? Fantrax is offering you that opportunity this year. Go over to the ffplaybook.com/Fantrax giveaway for all the details on how you can get entered into not only just going to an NFL regular season game of your choice with 11 of your other friends, but you also get $6,000 for travel and accommodation. So make sure to go over to the ffplaybook.com/Fantrax giveaway. The link is in your show notes over on podcast or in the YouTube description here over on YouTube. All right, JJ, let's get into the conversation here today. Running back rankings royale. I wanted to have you on here because I greatly respect your opinion. And I know that I can yell at you and you're not going to be super offended. And I know that it's going to go the other way as well. So what we're going to do here is we looked at the running back rankings that each of us have. And we have pulled out 4 players each that we think are just ridiculously ranked. We think these are players that are ranked too high, ranked way too low. We think are just ridiculous here. So what I'm going to do is turn this over to you. And I don't know your names. I don't know who you're going to point out in my rankings here. And you're going to present the name. And I will get a chance to offer my thoughts and reasons for why I have them ranked there. And then we will turn it back around and I will do the same for you. So I'm going to offer you the opportunity. First running back that you want to point out.
Yeah, so I think you probably know this, that you're really high on Joe Mixon, like compared to where the consensus is. The crazy thing is that I have Joe Mixon also ranked a little bit higher than where the consensus does, as well. But, you know, you have him at RB3. I clearly don't mind Mixon. I have him at RB6. So it's not like it's like, you know, in the first round, that is a generally drastic difference between RB3 and RB6. I obviously don't mind him, though. I just have a hard time drafting him over, you know, some of these more consistent pass catchers. Is what this comes down to at the end of the day is the pass catching ability. We know that pass catching strongly correlates to fantasy success, both in half. I mean, even in standard leagues, but definitely in half and full PPR formats. Mixon's highest pro rated target share season has been 12.3%. That's just target share per game times the number of games that he would have played if he hadn't gotten hurt. But that was also in that season where he only played 6 games, where he got hurt in that Indianapolis game. Dalvin Cook, who's ranked below him in your rankings, his lowest season was at 11.1%, which isn't that far from Joe Mixon's best season in target share. Now he's in a pass-friendlier offense for him. We know Austin Eckler can catch a lot of passes. I made some assumptions with, like, why you had Eckler. You like Spiller a little bit more. You think that he's going to take some of the goal line work or something like that. You know, I can understand why you're more worried about Derrick Henry. I just have a hard time, I think, with Mixon over Dalvin and Eckler within your rankings.
Yeah, this is not an easy decision to make, right? And the top of drafts where we're looking at these guys and saying, you know, like it is splitting hairs here when we're talking about 3 to 6 and you're like, okay, well, that's a 3-spot difference. But when we're at the beginning of drafts, that is super important to be pointing out the differences here. With Mixon, for me, this is having faith in and confidence in the talent level of the player, right? We saw what he did last year here in this offense. And throughout this offseason, I've been saying, I think this offense is really just kind of getting going, which is the scary part to think about with Joe Burrow and, you know, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. Like, the offensive firepower here is insane. And then you add in the investments into that offensive line. Joe Mixon has been doing what he's done for fantasy throughout the past several years with a absolutely abysmal offensive line. So if we get those investments of Lyle Collins, Ted Karras, right? If we get those investments here on that offensive line and rehaul this unit, we have the potential for Mixon to be more efficient, to be more effective. So it's really buying into the state of the offense around him and saying that the scoring opportunities, I don't think, are going to come down. I don't think that, you know, there are people out there that are pointing out potentially regression in the touchdown department for Joe Mixon. I'm saying, I don't really see that happening because this offense is going to be in the red zone just so much. And then as we get further down the rankings, like Derrick Henry, I do have a little bit of the injury concerns, the workload. With Dalvin Cook, I think that he's going to be a top 3 fantasy football running back when he's on the field, but I don't think he's going to play all 17 games. So you have to break that into, with Najee Harris, I have concerns about the pass workload. You know, all these different things just create a little bit more confidence for me in Joe Mixon to put him up there at RB3. And the beauty about it is you don't have to spend the 103 pick on Joe Mixon. You know, you can get him a little bit later on and you can still feel it based on my rankings, I can feel really, really confident that I got a value there at that point. So Mixon there at three. Any additional thoughts there, closing thoughts on Mixon before we move on?
No, I mean, it makes sense if you're worried, you know, from an injury standpoint with some of the other guys. You know, like I said, I'm higher on Mixon because I think consensus wise, he's usually in like that 7 or 8 range. I'm at RB6. So, I'm drafting him over Najee Harris, and a lot of people aren't drafting him over Najee Harris, for example. So I'm with you overall. I think it's just the pass catching that still scares me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will definitely acknowledge I don't have him projected for a ton of receptions or targets in my, you know, in my projections. Like, I don't have that. But still, at the same time, the efficiency taking a tick up, the scoring opportunities still being there. And I don't think that there's a lot of durability questions for Mixon. Like, people had that going into last offseason. And I was the one that was saying, don't really buy into that. It was more of what Zach Taylor was doing from a head coaching perspective, just keeping him kind of in this consistent, oh, he's going to play. He's going to play. And then he didn't play. Mixon's actually been pretty durable over the course of his career when you look at the overall state of the running back position. So that's kind of why I still have that confidence there with Joe Mixon at RB3. Let's stay here in that first round running back conversation. You mentioned his name. The difference here, you've got him. We actually have these guys flipped. So I'm glad that you mentioned it. RB3 for you is Austin Eckler. RB6 for me is Austin Eckler. So you mentioned it might be just because of Isaiah Spiller. I have concerns about the workload here and what Eckler is going to see this year, but I want to turn this over to you. Why do you still have confidence in Eckler at RB3 off the board?
Yeah, really, it's consistency from a target share perspective. We know that he's going to get looks through the air. LA last season, I know Austin Eckler, he's definitely a regression candidate. There's no doubt about it. Like, I won't hide away from that. But last year, LA was the most pass heavy team in terms of just raw volume. At the goal line. And so if that just sort of flips and reverses even just a little bit, that could at least mitigate some of the regression that's going to hit for Eckler. I don't mind Spiller as a dart either, in redraft even. I had some concerns about Spiller just in his athleticism and how that might translate, to the NFL. I think he's a fine enough prospect. It's really interesting because my prospect model at running back looks at a 90 speed score threshold. And technically, if you were to adjust for pro day numbers for Isaiah Spiller, he was just under that 90. But if you don't adjust for it, then he's above that 90. So I sort of just split the difference with him and said, yeah, he's fine enough as a prospect instead of saying he's completely doomed as a prospect.
Right.
I do think that he's a better option than what they've had from like a Larry Roundtree or like a Joshua Kelly, over the last couple of seasons. So I do think there's at least that. I'm just a sucker for pass catchers. That's what this comes down to. I want guys who are going to see or at least have, that 15-16% target share ceiling. And Eckler's at least shown that year after year. And this is an offense, too, that should just crush. I mean, it's just a really good offense overall.
So it's funny that you said that 15-16. I haven't projected for a 16% target share. So, like, from the target volume, it's 100% there. I have him with 103 targets on the year. I think he's going to be he's moving back to, and this is the reason why I have him a little bit lower. I think we're going to see more of what we saw with Eckler in years past, which is still a fantastic fantasy asset, like someone that you should still feel comfortable spending a first round pick on. I just don't see how he can return value on the RB2, which is his ADP, and then RB3 in your rankings based on the fact that he scored 20 touchdowns last year. And I see the potential for his rush attempts to come crashing down with Isaiah Spiller there in town. Now, is Spiller going to be incredibly efficient with his opportunity that he gets? Is he going to be like a dynamic fantasy asset? I don't really think so, but I think that LA is at least going to try to utilize him in that role, or at least a rotation, right? Is it Isaiah Spiller and then you see Larry Roundtree come in, or Joshua Kelly, like as that first and second down, still giving Eckler some work on the ground, of course, but utilizing him as more of that third down back. That's the difference here, where I can't see if Eckler is going to be moved back to that third down role. I can't see how he returns value on that price tag just because of the touchdown.
I think it's really going to come down to who sees goal line work. And if, right. or at least if Spiller digs into Eckler's goal line work more, because that was really the biggest difference between Eckler in previous seasons, that he's finally seeing those like high leverage looks where they would take him out previously. And so if Spiller does dig into that a little bit, yeah, there's definitely concern. But I think after once you get to this point in drafts in general at the running back position, you can start to nitpick and find, Mixon's pass catching, Dalvin Cook's injury and Derrick Henry's durability. And that I think is Eckler's big thing is he going to be that guy close to the end zone?
Yeah, there's question marks about everyone past Jonathan Taylor this year at the running back position, right? And the biggest thing to illustrate that with Austin Eckler in 2020, granted he played in 10 games, but 5 overall red zone rush attempts. Last year in 16 games, 48 red zone rush attempts. So it went from 5 to 48. And if he's not going to hold on to that, I can't see how he returns value there. All right, let's turn it back over to you. Your second running back that you had an issue with in my rankings.
I think the biggest gap, well, there's probably two guys we had pretty decent gaps, and that was really it, to be honest, like in terms of like large gaps. But let's talk about Zeke a little bit here.
I knew we were going to talk about Zeke.
Yeah, I mean, figured we would. I have Zeke at RB 18. You have him at RB 10. You know, to be fair, I have him in a tier where I can move him up. You know, I can shift him a little bit, and I you know, I'm fine if I have him at like RB 15. If you want to look at it that way too, you know, I'm around there. You know, I think that when you look at Zeke, and I even talked about this like last year. But, you know, you can look at 2 years ago, the Dak injury, right? And that's part of the reason why he wasn't as effective. And then last year, his own injury, and that's why he wasn't effective. But, you know, at the same time, the concerns are still there because we can't credit that entirely to those things. We don't know for sure. You know, he's been an RB2 in points per game the last 2 years. I know that he's finished well, but that's a lot of that has to do with the fact that he just plays. Right. You know, it's just that he's been available. You know, Tony Pollard's there capping upside to some degree. You know, with seeing more work in consecutive years and year over year within that offense. And obviously, you know, they might shift him over to the slot a little bit. We've seen a lot of reports about that, which makes sense as he played wide receiver and such in college. Yeah. I mean, he's able to do that and be sort of that Swiss Army knife, but him being on that team still caps Zeke's upside in some way. Like it's not like it's irrelevant. You know, Zeke's rush share that also dropped last season to just a little over 50%. He's seen a pretty big drop off over the last 3 years in 20 plus yard run rate. You know, his first 3 years, he was great. He was super explosive. And we haven't seen that nearly as much the last 3 years. So I don't mind Zeke at cost. I'm one of the weirdos who actually, you know, I love Tony Pollard at cost just because of the contingent upside and such. But I don't mind Zeke either. I don't like them on the same team if I'm drafting, sure, you know, in my leagues, but I like getting exposure to both of those guys. Cause I think Zeke obviously still has plenty of touchdown upside and stuff. But when I was looking at your rankings, you know, I look at Zeke versus a guy like Leonard Fournette, for instance, and you have Zeke over Fournette in those rankings, when I would argue that Fournette's situation within Tampa Bay, better offense, you know, less competition, unless you really, 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 really like Keyshawn Vaughn and Rashad White and you think that they're going to use them more. And so I would just say, you know, from that perspective and that sort of juxtaposition, I would prefer an Uncle Lenny, you know, over Zeke in that instance.
Yeah, so I think with Zeke, the argument really all hinges on what do you believe happened last year? And for me, I'm really buying into playing through a partially torn PCL. Like that was going to hinder him. And looking at the opportunity that he still had, 17 games, 237 rush attempts, over 1,000 yards, 10 rushing touchdowns. And you look at the red zone rush attempts, 37 red zone rush attempts last year, 10 touchdowns on that opportunity. So it's really coming down to like Zeke could still be, quote, inefficient, like with 4 yards per carry, 4.2 yards per carry over the past couple of years, like he could still be in that range. And I haven't projected for that, but the workload, this offense is going to need him. They're going to need him when you have so many question marks at the wide receiver core, which is why we're seeing Tony Pollard talked about more as a slot receiver. And we'll get to Pollard here in a second, because there's a difference there in rankings too. But with Zeke, it's all about the workload is going to be there. 71, 71, 65 targets each of the past 3 seasons. Like he's going to be involved in the receiving game, even if he's not fully, fully healthy or not fully, fully efficient. So I just look at that and say, there are a lot of concerns that I have with a lot of these other running backs. Leonard Fournette is right in that same range for me. So I think the upside is 100% there. I don't think he's going to see as much work on the ground as Ezekiel Elliott, right? Fournette was involved more as a receiver last season than I think a lot of people realize. So with Zeke, it all comes down to if he can be back, be fully healthy, get his yards per carry up just a little bit, that the overall rush attempt volume is there. He's going to be the main option on the goal line inside the opponent's 10-yard line. Ezekiel Elliott had 20 carries to Tony Pollard's 3. So like it is 100% Ezekiel Elliott there at the goal line. And I think the touchdown opportunities are 100% there. So it's just looking at that and saying the overall volume is too much to ignore there with Ezekiel Elliott. Let's talk about Tony Pollard though, because he is one of the players that we have a big difference on in rankings while we're here in the Dallas backfield. RB 24 for you, RB 31 for me. So a little bit of a difference here. I can see bumping him up in full PPR formats, but Tony Pollard, is this really like you were expecting him to be the full-time starting slot wide receiver, or is this really kind of just baking in some of that upside if Zeke were to miss time?
So there's a lot to this. I can probably go for hours about Tony Pollard. I want to preface by saying I'm not one of those Tony Pollard bros, you know, who thinks that like he should be, you know, the lead back and should have been the lead back for a while. I'm not that. This is actually the first year in redraft that I've been in on Tony Pollard. There's some historical ADP trends as to why I like Pollard. You know, I've done a lot of studies on finding breakouts at running back by looking at historical ADP trends, because we can look at the market and it can be helpful. And middle round running backs, you know, you generally want RB1s on their own team who are going in the middle rounds as opposed to RB2s. But when you get RB2s, and this is team RB2s, when they have team RB1s, so Zeke versus Pollard, Zeke is the team RB1 by ADP, Pollard's the RB2. When those RB1s are going in that running back dead zone area, the RB2s have really, really good hit rates. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that typically that dead zone is with a lot of running back and consists of a lot of running backs that are just inferior from a talent perspective.
Sure.
And so if there's an RB2 on a team that's still getting drafted in the middle rounds, that tells you that that RB2 is probably a good player in general. You know, just some examples of this historically, Tariq Cohen, when he broke out, Jordan Howard, you know, was going in the third round and sort of in that dead zone range. And then Austin Eckler, when Melvin Gordon was holding out, when Austin Eckler broke out, he was, I actually think that that's a pretty comparable situation, what's going on with Zeke and Tony Pollard, because that year, Melvin Gordon on a points per game basis also exceeded expectation by a decent amount, but it was Austin Eckler who just did it by a greater amount because of where he was being drafted.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of ADP trends that suggest that this is good for Tony Pollard. You know, another thing with middle round running backs, you want pass catchers. Those are the guys who generally exceed expectation the most. But then on top of that, yeah, I mean, like we've seen Pollard get better and better, you know, year over year in terms of volume, and he's been very, very efficient. And my argument really is that, you know, if Zeke weren't playing, like if we knew that Zeke wasn't part of that backfield, and we knew that Tony Pollard was the RB1 in that backfield, where would Pollard be drafted? Because I think the right answer to that is probably like the early second round in fantasy drafts, right? So we have that contingent upside if something happens to Zeke from an injury perspective. And realistically, my projections for Tony Pollard have him at about ADP. And so what that tells me is that people aren't necessarily looking at that contingent upside enough, because, you know, realistically, you shouldn't just look at a projection and put the guy, you know, right, where he would be projected at in terms of your rankings, in terms of ADP. You should look at where the upside lies too. And so that's why I bumped him up then above where that ADP and where that projection is, because if something does happen to Zeke, then all of a sudden Tony Pollard's a potential RB1 in fantasy. I think he's more of a low-end RB2, high-end RB3, with Zeke in that offense, more than likely, unless they really blow it up and really make him their primary slot and they just go crazy with it, which, you know, is a possibility to some degree, but this is really just playing on upside. And it's really just playing on the fact that, like, I you know, you can still find some in your RB2 spot with Pollard, you can still get some production from him. But then he has that upside if something happens to Zeke.
Yeah. The difference there for me is his ADP consensus is RB32. I've got him at RB31. You've got him all the way up at 24. That price tag, and it, granted, you don't have to, and what you're saying with your rankings is like, this is a value, right? This is the difference in rankings versus ADP and utilizing them in conjunction. But with Tony Pollard, if I'm drafting him as an RB2, like, am I really going to feel comfortable taking him over some of these other guys who have the immediate guaranteed volume versus just a guy that I think is in the flex conversation week in, week out, but someone then that does carry the upside? That's why I've got him in that mid-range RB3 territory.
Yeah. And I would say with that, you know, a lot of the players in that range, you know, I think Pollard's more of the, if you're getting him as your RB2, you should be pounding running back in the middle rounds to ensure that you're increasing your hit rate of finding like a very good running back in those rounds. Right. Yeah. Like, he's a very good, like, I go with a modified zero RB type approach, anchor RB, hero RB, whatever you want to call it. You know, I go with that approach all the time in my drafts, and, you know, I have that RB1 spot locked up, and that RB2 spot, I start to draft where, you know, Tony Pollard is my RB2 sometimes in these leagues, but I'm also getting a Chase Edmonds a little bit after. Yeah. And then I'm getting some of these other backs and just kind of piling up that running back library to ensure a hit, because again, that upside's immense if things go right for Tony Pollard.
Absolutely. All right, let's turn it over to you. How many do you have left? I've lost track of where
I have two left. I have two left.
Okay, two. I have one left. So, all right, it's your turn.
Let's go to Damian Harris. Let's talk about Damian Harris. You have an RB26. I have an RB35. I actually like Ramondre Stevenson straight up more than Damian Harris this year. And a lot of that has to do, again, with once you get to those rounds, once you're in those middle rounds, I'm striving more for that just straight up upside as opposed to hitting that projection. I think Damian Harris is sort of like the quintessential hitting that projection kind of guy. Like, is he a decent value in terms of like where you're drafting him and where he'll finish in fantasy football this year?
Right.
Probably. I mean, I would argue that everything pretty much went flawlessly for Harris last year, just in terms of situation, and he scores 15 touchdowns. He was still a mid-range RB2 in half PPR, and he was like RB20 on a points per game basis in full PPR with those 15 touchdowns, right? So everything goes perfect for him, and he's still just an RB2, which is relatively replaceable in fantasy football. You know, no New England running back since 2011 has had a 6% prorated target share with 100 or more carries, because they love to have those specific roles for their running backs. You know, and then, you know, using those thresholds over the last 2 years and a half PPR leagues, high end RB2s have come in around 14 points per game. And of the 158 running backs since 2011 with 100 or more carries and a target share under 6%, which no New England running back has, you know, that's what we see from New England running backs, that their early down back hit. Only four of them out of the 158 hit 14 half PPR points per game. So essentially my argument here for Damian Harris is not so much can he meet expectation, it's more so where's the ceiling coming from. This really isn't like a best ball argument or anything like that either. This is strictly a, you know, managed season long league thing. I would just rather go with Ramondre, who could maybe play that Rex Burkhead role for them. And you know, if touchdowns sort of shift towards him a little bit more, then all of a sudden you're getting that receiving juice with some of that touchdown upside.
Okay, so let me say this right off the bat. I don't want to draft Damian Harris this year. Good. Like, okay, I don't want anything to do with Damian Harris, but I still got him at RB26 because he could have the touchdowns that put him there at the end of the year. And looking at this tier of 26 through 30 in my running back rankings, I don't want anything to do with them. And these are really the guys that I think at the end of the year could finish here, but they're not guys that I'm drafting. Yeah. I am getting to that tier, and I am 100% looking at wide receiver in that range. That is Damian Harris, Miles Sanders, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Kareem Hunt, maybe, Rashad Penny. Like, none of those guys have been on my rosters in any mock drafts that I've done so far this year. So Damian Harris, the conversation really becomes, I think he is going to be the only quote-unquote safe option in this backfield that I feel like is going to have the workload. With Ramondre Stevenson, I've got him further down in the rankings because does he have that role, or is it Ty Montgomery, or is it JJ Taylor, or is it, you know, like any of these guys? I don't know week in and week out if Ramondre Stevenson is going to be active. We saw that last year where people were like, yeah, it's Ramondre Stevenson time, and then it would come out at, you know, noon or 11:30 before the 1 o'clock games, oh, Ramondre Stevenson is a healthy scratch today. Yeah. You know, and it's like, I feel like that is more of what we're moving towards. So as far as if you ask me which one would I prefer to have at price tag, yes, it would be Ramondre Stevenson, because Damian Harris is RB25 in ADP. I'm not buying him there. I will take the shot on Ramondre Stevenson, but I'm also concerned that that could be a wasted pick just because of the offense that they're in with. We're hearing really, really bad things coming out about New England just the state of this offense, you know, like, so Damian Harris, could he reach touchdown upside at the end of the year? Maybe not. Like, there's a ton of concerns there. So yes, I do have Damian Harris ranked there. But it comes with a little bit of an asterisk saying, like, I don't want to draft him there, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Final player here for me, we'll go back up the board here. That's Saquon Barkley. Saquon here at RB9 for you, RB14 for me. Not a major difference. I do think that Saquon Barkley has plenty of upside this year. However, RB9 is choosing him over some other guys that I feel like have a lot more consistency and safety for your lineup versus Barkley, who has the potential to deal with injury yet again. And he plays for the New York Giants offense, which is led by Daniel Jones. And I have a ton of concerns about that. So Saquon Barkley, what are your thoughts there having him inside your top 10 running backs?
Yeah, you know, from a Giants perspective, I have plenty of concerns about Daniel Jones too. You know, he's apparently not been doing well in camp. You know, it's a new offense that he's trying to learn. But I would say, like, the way that this offense has operated over the last 2 years, it's literally been the worst offense in football. Like, objectively, like, they've scored the fewest touchdowns. They were like 32nd and 31st in offensive touchdowns over the last 2 years. It's a number that generally regresses because things change and guys get healthy, all that kind of stuff. You get Brian Daboll coming in, you get an improved offensive line. You have weapons that I actually like the weapons generally. I think Kenny Golladay might be not a thing anymore. But I love Wandale Robinson. I think he could be a great slot. Kadarius Toney really flashed last year. And so if those guys stay healthy, I think the weapons are fine. And it really just comes down to, you know, Saquon just seeing a lot of work in this offense and seeing the dump offs that we know that he can see. You know, last year in the four games that he played before that injury, you know, half those games, he was a true RB1. The other two, it was really tough matchups, just a bad situation overall. And so it's just me buying into the volume, me buying into this Daboll offense, and me buying into some positive regression for the Giants just in general, because it's almost impossible to be as bad as they were with Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett is just an abomination for fantasy football. It's just horrible.
It was pretty bad. Yeah, for me, this is right in line with ADP. RB14 is his ADP consensus over on Fantasy Pros. So this is something where, like, I'm kind of finding that line. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Saquon Barkley finishes the year as a top five running back because the volume is there. Right. But at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked if he finishes outside the top 24 at the end of the year because the Giants offense was so bad and he got banged up yet again. Right. So that's kind of just where I'm finding that balance. All right. Your last running back that you wanted to point out.
I think the one guy that it's sort of in the mid to late rounds is Ronald Jones. I'm
I knew you were going to talk about Ronald
Jones. I'm very low on Ronald Jones, and partially it's a few fold. It's the fact that we haven't really seen
him. Is this just because you wanted to talk about Pacheco?
Yeah. I mean, 100%. I just want to talk about Isaiah Pacheco and keep that hype train going, man. I actually, this week, I put Pacheco above Ronald Jones in my redraft rankings, which I think a lot of people would probably be like, what are you doing? This is cringe. This is ridiculous to do something like that. But the way that I see it, and again, I think this is sort of the theme of this show for us, is that I'm just looking at upside a little bit differently than you do. And yeah, that's just, it's your own personal taste and how you want to draft your team. But I do think that a guy like Pacheco just has inherently more upside than Ronald Jones does, because we know that Ronald Jones is not a pass catcher, like, period. We have so much evidence that he's not a pass catcher, not a great pass blocker, but he's very explosive too. And my problem with Jones, and I'm not surprised that there are reports coming out now that he might get cut, only because I think he's sort of a redundant asset to Isaiah Pacheco. And, at the beginning of camp, they didn't know exactly what they had in Pacheco. And now he's lighting it up and he looks great. And he's doing, we're seeing him on these wheel routes from Patrick Mahomes, like 30 yards down the field, catching these passes. And so they're seeing more out of Pacheco. And if you look at what Kansas City did this offseason, last year, Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't have a single 20 plus yard run. His problem in the NFL has been lack of explosion. And so what did they do? They get Ronald Jones, who's probably the most explosive running back in free agency, at least on the ground. He's a great runner. But then they also go out and they get the guy with the best speed score in this draft class, and Isaiah Pacheco, who, by the way, in my prospect model comped to Damian Williams, who thrived in this offense, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of connections being made there. I think that there is a legitimate chance that Jones ends up getting cut. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to keep four too. They try to keep McKinnon on that roster as well. But to me, it's like McKinnon's sort of this all around back that can fill in for both Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Pacheco. And then Pacheco really could fill in and just do what Ronald Jones does because of that explosiveness. So right now I'm just completely fading Ronald Jones. I don't think he's a worthwhile get because there is that chance that he just doesn't make the team.
So early on in the offseason for us, when we don't have the reports, right, we are just trying to put pieces to the puzzle together. And early on in the offseason, my attempt to figure out this Kansas City Chiefs backfield was, okay, well, Ronald Jones does not profile well as a pass catcher. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, fantastic pass catcher. Okay, now Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't profile great as a first and second down back. So my attempt to figure out this puzzle was, okay, Ronald Jones is going to be their first and second down guy. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be their third down. And then as we have moved deeper into the offseason, and it's so funny, I started laughing right when you pointed out Ronald Jones. Last night at 11 o'clock, I tweeted out, I've obviously been talking about Jones a lot this offseason. I'm projecting that he could be something in this Chiefs offense. Adjust with new information. The more that comes out about Jones potentially being on the out here, I'm moving down my rankings. Early on in training camp, we got a report coming out that Jones might not make the 53-man roster. And at that point, you're like, okay, it's one beat report. Like, you're not really you're taking that with a grain of salt. There's been a couple now that have been, and Jones is running with the second team. Pacheco's lighting it up. So this is something where early on today, I moved Jones down my rankings now, and I moved Pacheco up a little bit. Now, this is still kind of in a standstill where it's like, I still need that official confirmation here before I really vault Pacheco up the rankings like you have. But Jones definitely did move down my rankings. I was going to mention it before we started recording, and I forgot. So we had the conversation here. It turned into a good conversation.
Yeah, look, it's good. Like, I think that people need to understand that, like, we're working with the information that we currently have. And if you don't adjust, you're not doing your job as an analyst. Like, if you're getting new information, whatever that information is, like, we all do it. We all should do it. Like, this is about being right for people who are listening to the stuff that we produce, not just sticking to your guns and saying, this is the way that I feel about the situation when new information arises. This is the way that it works.
Yeah. And I think it could be a good pairing. I think Ronald Jones and Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that kind of that role and capacity, I think it could be great for the Chiefs offense. But if they've got a cheaper option in Pacheco that they drafted in the seventh round, why not, and Jones is on a 1-year deal, why not just roll with that? If you think that Pacheco can bring you what Jones can, then cut Ronald Jones or trade him or whatever. Like, it makes sense from a football perspective as well. All right, JJ, thank you so much for taking some time out, running through some running back rankings differences here. Why don't you let everyone know what you got going on over at Late Round Fantasy Football?
Yeah, man. Lateround.com, you can purchase a draft guide that I did. It's not really like player profile focus. It's more game theory, strategy focus. That's like 90% of the guide. And then I still, offer up my players to target, players to avoid and such in my rankings and tiers. But definitely more, my style with like the game theory stuff. That's over on lateround.com. Got a Patreon, got the Late Round podcast, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. I will say that late round fantasy football guide is absolutely beautiful. I have been running through it, and it is, I can't get through all of it because it is just so jam packed with information. So make sure to check that out as well. All right. Remember, if you want to take your entire fantasy football league to an NFL regular season game of your choice, plus $6,000 for travel and accommodations, make sure to go over to the ffplaybook.com/fantrax giveaway for all of the details on how to enter. The ffplaybook.com/fantrax giveaway. All right, that'll do it for JJ Zacharyson. I'm Kyle Yates, and we'll see you next time.